and welcome to the Q York podcast, brought to you from our local church in the beautiful city of York in the UK. The message you're about to hear is from one of our services, which also feature great live music and relevant movie clips. These can all be found on our blog, so to make sure you're getting the full experience, feel free to head over to qyork.co.uk and select blog to find the relevant content. There's also a huge selection of talks and live music videos on our media page, as well as a donate button if you'd like to show your appreciation and enable us to keep producing free content like this. Finally, to stay up to date on new blogs and events at Q, you can sign up for emails by filling in your name and email address at the bottom of any page on the website. But right now, it's time for the message.
So yeah, as Claire said, Kev and I are going to delve down the rabbit hole of apocalypticism today. We felt with a few things that have been going on recently, it would be a really good topic to touch on. So we're going to start with a little bit of the history of where the idea comes from, and then Kev's going to work a little bit more on how it works within the present day, and we're going to do some discussion around the tables, and then I'm going to kind of throw out some questions at the end to summarize it. I know some people struggle with history. You know, we all have our preferences in what we like, but I'm a strong believer in that history, without understanding it, can actually do us a disservice in a way, because, you know, they say that those who don't learn from history are condemned to repeat it. So I do think it's important that we do discuss some of these things as to frame some of the understanding and concepts that we're trying to look at. So we'll start with this. The term apocalypse has taken on a rather doomsday connotation over time. Its origins, however, trace back to ancient Greece, and it simply means revelation or unveiling or revealing. In the context of religious texts, it refers to a divine disclosure or insight into hidden truths. The shift towards associating apocalypse with catastrophe and the end of the world can pretty much be blamed on one thing, and that is the Book of Revelation. Now, I should ask at this point, has anybody ever read it in its entirety from beginning to end? Right, a few. Oh, wow, a lot of you. Impressive. The word became synonymous with cataclysmic scenarios and the end of life as we know it. So while its original meaning was more about revealing knowledge, the word apocalypse now often invokes visions of disaster and chaos. We see apocalyptic teachers throughout ancient Judaism, whereby it was believed that the world operated in very dualistic categories. One was evil, and the other was good. God was the head of the good, and demons and Satan were the head of the bad. And at the age and culture of the time, the forces of evil were more dominant than the good. It was fundamentally about a wrestle with man's relationship to the earth and his surroundings. There was suffering, pandemics, poverty, wars, illness, natural disasters, and much more. The view held was that God would intervene to cleanse the planet of the forces of darkness and usher in a utopian, holy, and good kingdom here on earth. And not only that, but many of them were also expecting this to happen within their lifetime. These ideas form various sects and movements, ultimately influencing Jesus himself, who, yes, was an apocalyptic Jew, along with the Apostle Paul and pretty much all of the New Testament writers. In fact, you see later writers drawing on previous apocalyptic prophecy that didn't happen, adapting it to make it work for the current culture. As mentioned earlier, the Book of Revelation is probably the most notorious for its apocalyptic text. In fact, it was so intense and graphic that it almost didn't make it into the canon. Any of you know that? I did a talk on Revelation years ago at the lab. I don't know whether any of you are able to come to that, where we delved really deep into the whole concept and the ideas of how it was formed. And it really is quite revealing when you look into its backstory. It most certainly was not a book with a view that people would be reading it 2,000 years later. So to start today, let's look at a brief history of the book so we can read it appropriately in the correct context today. You have this guy called John of Patmos. There's a lot of dispute whether it's the same John who wrote John's Gospel. I would argue that it wasn't, mainly for the context of how it's written and the wording used, but again, we can have a conversation about that. He was exiled to an island near Turkey due to anti-Christian persecution at the time. He has this vision whereby he shoots up to heaven and he sees God on his throne with a scroll filled with God's judgments that are set to be unleashed on the planet. Now, there's a lot more detail in that, right? But we would be here all day if I started going into it, so that's just a brief summary. Anyway, Christ directs John to write letters of warning to various churches. These reviews of the churches outline what they are getting right and what they're getting wrong, and that they better get their act together if they are getting it wrong or else. Now, it's all pretty gentle up to chapter 4. And then it does start to get pretty grim. We have the revealing of the Antichrist, which is named the Beast from the Sea. And from there, all hell breaks loose. We have men on horses creating havoc on earth, the sun blacking out, the stars falling from the sky, earthquakes. And you would think this is bad, but we really are only just getting started at this point. We then have angels blowing trumpets, which launches the next series of terror, the seven bowls of God's wrath. People are plagued with sores, the rivers and seas turn to blood, a heat wave scorches people on the spot, dragons torment people, endless darkness, an endless war, and even worse, heaven is silent. Not pleasant, eh? There is a giant battle in Armageddon, and I don't know whether you remember from all those years ago, Armageddon is actually a specific place. Between the beast and the heavenly army and the enemies of God, and of course, Christ wins, but after all of this, it makes a fight scene from Braveheart look tame. After all this death and destruction, there is a final judgment and people are raised from the dead. The enemies of God and the beast are thrown into the lake of fire. Those who sided with evil are also thrown into the lake of fire. Anyone who has ever lived, no mercy. Those who are on the side of Christ are given an eternal city. Now, interestingly, this isn't heaven as we think heaven is, like going up to heaven. It's an earthly utopia that descends from heaven. It's gold encrusted and has gates of pearl. Here, God's followers live for eternity, happily ever after, no more suffering or pain forevermore. The book concludes with John of Patmos asking this to be a reality soon, and Jesus assures him, don't worry, it will happen soon. And as Hannah said today, I would have specifically asked him to define soon. Sorry, that was just your best line of the week, Hannah. Can you define soon, please? Now, if this is read as an actual coming reality, is there any wonder how terrified people get? But the book is giving us clues throughout that show us that this isn't the case. So let's just break it down a little bit. Let's take the beast from the sea, also referred to as 666. For example, what did you say? Godzilla. For example, talked about in chapter 13. This has been you're going to find this funny, by the way. This has been ascribed to many different figures over time, from the devil to the Pope, all the way to Henry Kissinger, all the way to the World Economic Forum. Why? Because the line that goes through the text looks like 666. Saddam Hussein, Obama, Trump, Hitler. This is a good one. Ronald Reagan was associated with it because he had six letters in each name. And last but not least, even Queen Beyoncé herself has been labeled the Antichrist because she wore a gold crown in a song about femininity. In effect, anyone or anything you don't like becomes the Antichrist. But this isn't what the text was referring to. The first emperor to persecute Christians was Nero. His name, when written in Hebrew, gives the numerical value of 666, because in the Hebrew alphabet, each letter represents a numerical value. So the beast was a specific person. In chapter 17, the text refers to the seven hills. Again, it's easy to just brush past this, but it's telling us something. The seven hills is explicitly in reference to the city of Rome. Nero, 666, was the emperor of Rome. It's a major giveaway. Rome had vast wealth. It was persecuting Christians left, right, and center. It was a horrible, destructive time. Once this is understood, you realize what is being written is about a specific enemy at a specific time, and those within it were desperately seeking liberation and redemption. Rome would fall, and the righteous, the Christians, would be rewarded with God's gold, eternal kingdom. So why is all this important? Well, let's come back to the present day. The problem we have in the modern day religious circles is texts that are full of symbolism and written within a very specific political and cultural structure are now being read through the lens that all scriptures are timeless, infallible, inerrant, and therefore it must still apply to us within this modern day framework. Taking these texts at face value also contradicts messages surrounding Jesus as seen in other books in the Gospels. Again, this is why earlier I mentioned why there's much conflict as to whether which John wrote the books. You have Jesus, the savior of mankind, who is said to have died for the sins of the world, who teaches love and compassion towards our enemy, only to apparently in Revelation go completely rogue and wipe us all off the face of the earth with zero mercy whatsoever. Is it possible to have both? These contradictions can't simply be overlooked. They have to be understood and discussed in order to get a clearer view of the real message behind the text. So why is it helpful to look at this? You don't need to be religious to hold an apocalyptic view of the world. It's not as fringe as you may think. If your worldview is one of catastrophe and impending doom towards yourself or others, you fit pretty well within this category. Whilst apocalypticism has continued to dominate segments of modern-day evangelical Christianity and Judaism, it has also bled into wider aspects of society and culture without us even recognizing it. I find particularly over the last 4 years, apocalyptic language has become increasingly dominant in our news. I opened my Google News on Thursday this week and read the headline, "Huge loss of life predicted due to heavy winds, to be followed by the big scorch as, wait for it, 19 degrees Saharan temperatures hit the UK. I'm still in a jumper at 19 degrees. Even science, or scientism, should we call it, has become a victim of this mentality. In any of these fields or isms, if one has been captured by a particular ideology, the information that you input will already be misplaced and therefore create incorrect results. This parallels really well with the teachings that we learn about original sin. If your premise is X, what you believe and how you live your life will be why. Just in recent weeks, we've had Storm Kathleen along with a total eclipse blown up on social media, with people saying things such as, "God is not happy, judgment is coming, repent for the second coming is imminent." Here's one for you. A female astrologer was so concerned that it represented the coming spiritual warfare, the eclipse, that she stabbed her partner and threw her two kids out of her SUV onto the freeway, killing her daughter. I mean, just think about that for a second. I mean, it's so extreme. So the fear of what they thought would come made them act out a certain way because they were terrified of the impending doom. I mean, it's really quite awful. You also had Just Stop Oil and various other movements declaring, Mother Earth has spoken and we are being punished for our mistreatment of her. We only have a matter of months to end our evil ways, or humanity as we know it is over. All sound very similar to the text that I just read from Revelation. Experts have recently discovered that since 2020, anxiety, fear, and depression has increased 60% across all ages. Is there any wonder why? Now, as I bring this section to a close, just like the story of Chicken Little, has anybody seen Chicken Little? Yeah. The sky has been falling for the last 2,000 years, and every time it doesn't, tumbleweed, until the next time. The Simpsons are usually a pretty good source for future events, so let's check it out. It's the end of the world
as we know it, and I feel fine. Hello, hi. Everybody, sing along with that hymn. Morning. There's The Simpsons doing what it does best there. Many of you might not be aware of this, but that video has been doing the rounds a lot this week because on Monday, Joel's mentioned the solar eclipse, but the rapture was supposed to have happened because the solar eclipse was tracking over many towns in the US that happened to be called Nineveh, which has biblical connotations of the end of the world. So that means one of two things, right? Either it didn't happen, or we have all been left below. Now, looking around the room, it obviously didn't happen because Mick's still here. And so Jesus obviously has not been and taken the virtuous with him. And the other thing, what's with the clothes? Like, everyone's clothes just fall off and they go to heaven. What does that mean? We go back to being naked again, like the Garden of Eden. Who told you you weren't wearing any clothes? Anyway, I digress. So anyway, you might have noticed on your table you've got these little rapture survival cards. So feel free to give yourself a tick for the first one. Tick. So well done, everyone survived this week, this time. Now, in this bit, we're going to see if we can spot any parallels between the apocalyptic thinking of the ancient world and today's equivalent apocalyptic thinking. And I'm going to try and say the word apocalyptic properly each time, and I might fail each time, especially when you try and say it as apocalypticism. Anyway, Joel's given us a good rundown, Apocalypticism 101, and he's laid the groundwork. Now, for me, the word apocalypse throws up all kinds of images in my head, having grown up in an evangelical church environment. Images of war, plagues, violence, earthquakes, floods, economic chaos, and seeing all those who didn't accept the correct belief system and follow the rules getting their comeuppance. Now, it's easy to see, actually, why people made the leap that we're in the last days now, because we see all the same signs around us all the time. But every generation throughout time has believed that they're in the last days. Nothing's changed. Now, as Joel said, all the apocalypse writers of the Bible believed they were in the last days. And when it never happens, the goalposts get moved, and we continue to move the goalposts to this day, even down to this week. So do we really believe that the writers of 2,000 years ago were writing about Trump, Putin, COVID, climate change, thousands of years in the future? It's an obvious and natural conclusion to come to because we have all this history that we can kind of look back on and writings that we've inherited over time. And because we can't necessarily perceive the future, we just kind of sit on the end of this timeline. And so we're always at the end of time. And so we can easily make those things apply to now. And even the Mormons, actually, as a side note, they call themselves the Latter-day Saints because when they were founded, they believed there was only about 15 years left. And so Joel also touched upon this apocalyptic thinking, finding its way into aspects of society and culture beyond religion. But do we hold it to the same kind of scrutiny? Now, on your tables, you'll have seen that you've got about 40-odd examples of times where catastrophe was predicted and never happened. In fact, in many cases, the opposite happened. And here are some other notable ones. Remember the Millennium Bug? Who remembers that one? Yeah, Mick, I heard that you had to go to the bank at midnight to make sure it was all going to be all right. Yeah. So many believe that computer systems would malfunction and lead into chaos in infrastructure, financial markets, and communication networks. Oh, and we were told that planes would just start falling out of the sky. And none of that happened, but maybe that's because some people did put some hard work in. Mick, you were there, weren't you, at midnight? Sorry, let's just call it the Mick talk this morning. Okay, so here's some other ones. In 1966, they were saying all oil will be gone in 10 years. 1970, the world will use up all its natural resources by the year 2000. Urban citizens will require gas masks by 1985. There'll be an ice age by the year 2000. This was predicted in the 70s. And then in 1971, they said, new ice age coming by 2020 or 2030. In 1972, they said, new ice age by 2070. See the goalposts moving. 1976, famines are imminent. 1978, there's no end in sight for the 30-year global cooling trend. That's right, they thought that there was global cooling in those days. 1980, peak oil in 2000, which basically means that'll be the maximum amount of oil we can get, and then it's just going to decline after that. 1988, they said the Maldives will be underwater by 2019. Who's been to the Maldives in the past 10 years? Yes. Is it still there? Yeah. In fact, they're actually planning massive building projects there currently because there's no sign of that actually happening. What else have we got? I mean, I could go on forever with this, but they were saying in the year 2000 that children won't know what snow is anymore. There'll be famine in 10 years if we don't give up eating fish, meat, and dairy. That was said in 2002. In 2004, they said Britain will be Siberia by 2024. It might be a hot summer. Manhattan will be underwater by 2015, and the Arctic will be ice-free by 2015 as well. Now, there's millions more. We're just scratching the surface. But I would like to say now, most of these, they do focus on climate and environmental issues. Because that was the information that was most readily available on this in this research. But let me be clear, I know that climate change is a hot topic today, and I'm not saying that there aren't concerns, and I'm not trying to downplay any of those issues in any way at all. What I'm doing is just pointing at those as examples so that we can recognize that there's a pattern that as humans, we just keep predicting catastrophe and getting it wrong. Now, it works on a smaller scale, too, in more day-to-day things, like, for example, well, predictions of sports stadiums being empty because of the invention of TV. And also, similarly, the ability to record music in the late 1800s would end live music forever. This is what they actually thought. Musicians were saying, no one's going to come to the shows anymore. Nowadays, we have AI threatening to eradicate artists, writers, musicians. And I happen to interact with a lot of artists, actually, who are absolutely terrified that AI is going to ruin their lives. And they end up actually naming and shaming anyone who uses it and making the whole idea an enemy that must be conquered. Otherwise, they can never be happy. And they end up fighting a battle rather than actually focusing on the thing that they fear losing, the art itself. And so as an artist, I know that I'm not actually immune to the threats, but who knows where that ends? I'd rather just enjoy it while it lasts. But we are very capable of moving beyond catastrophe, as history's proved time and time again. Now, on the screen now, there's an image of a giant doomsday clock, or there will be in a second, which is displayed in Union Square, New York City, which shows how long we've got left before the effects of global warming become irreversible. How lovely it must be to walk to work every day and look up at that. There's another slide of another doomsday clock, which I learned about just last night when I was just doing some extra reading on this. This doomsday clock was created in 1947, around the time of the Cold War, and each year The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists set the clock to display how close we are to global catastrophe. So someone literally stands there every year and they move the little hand, which is quite a funny image. So that means that when the clock strikes midnight, that basically means it's the end of the world. I don't know who's actually going to put it to midnight when the world's ended, but that's another point. But this year, in 2024, it was set to 90 seconds to midnight, with the focus being man-made threats around nuclear war, AI, and biotechnology. Now, that one might sound a bit arbitrary and abstract, since the numbers that they're talking about, you know, 90 seconds, it doesn't really mean anything. But I mention it because this becomes the news that looks like the next slide. It ends up in all our papers and on the TV, and it's part of the big doomsday PR machine. You know, the experts are saying they can make a headline like that, basically, out of someone just moving a clock to something every year that they think, oh, you know, Putin's looking a bit naughty this year, let's move it closer to midnight. So another thing I would like to point out, actually, is that not necessarily all predictions are wrong. With the doomsday clock in New York, you know, it claims we've only got a few years left, but maybe this time it'll be right. But after going through this huge list of failed predictions, it seems that instead of explaining their findings in a clear and rational way and presenting the facts as they are, they seem to just shoot themselves in the foot by making these predictions and losing credibility in the process. If you'd taken all these predictions seriously, you'd have not only been stressed out, but you'd have been wrong. The other thing that could be noted about apocalypticism is the hypocrisy around the preachers of it. There are countless preachers who love to tell of God's day of judgment for fornicators and adulterers whilst they're getting caught having sex with prostitutes, and those who preach climate crisis flying all over the world in private jets, or even those that told us during COVID that leaving our house and mixing with friends and family would kill people while they were having wild parties. And there's nothing wilder than a political party. Whee. So right now I want to give you just a few minutes, maybe 10 minutes or so, just to have a chat about some of these things. Just take a look at the bits of paper on your tables. Do you remember any of these? Did you believe any of them at the time, and what do you think about them now? Do you have any concerns about the future? Is believing that we only have 90 seconds to save the world actually a good motivator? There's many things you could talk about, but just feel free to let the discussion flow a bit. We'll go for 10 minutes, and then we'll have another video before Joel comes to tidy up the mess I've just made. And I'm going to go and hide now. Goodbye.
So the problem with apocalypticism is that it is more often than not leads to irrational beliefs and actions. In May 2011, Harold Camping predicted the end of the world was near. A woman who believed him and wanted a jump start as not to face fire and brimstone, quite grim, slashed her 11 and 13-year-old's throats with a box cutter and then did her own. The world did not end. The rapture did not happen. Miraculously, they did survive, but it was an extreme act of self-sabotage. Harold Camping went on to predict the next apocalypse from his prison cell and continued to do so for years. Every time it didn't happen, he was confused. Rather than holding his fundamental ideas to scrutiny, he continued to double down. During a feared fuel crisis years back, pushed by the government and the media, a house not so far from me began hoarding gas canisters in her kitchen. One day they exploded. She was severely burned. We didn't run out of fuel. So what is the root of all this? At core, it's fear, which ultimately distorts reality. The fear of the unknown, a lack of certainty about the future. And like in the clip just shown, the lack of faith or optimism in the human ability to find solutions to make our lives better. Living irrationally and emotionally charged isn't healthy. As a kid, when I was angry or stressed, my mum would say to me, calm down or someone's going to get hurt. When the aftermath did occur, one might feel shame, or they block out those unpleasant feelings of their negligent behavior, and instead they start to project this on others. So after all that's been said this morning, all that we've learned, all that's been discussed around your tables, I would like to present some questions for you to take away and have a think about. Number one, like all the failed doomsday predictions Kev shared with us earlier, did you believe any? Do you still believe them now? And in believing them, how is it making you feel? Number two, in your belief, whether religious or any other belief, did you ever consider objections to the narrative? I have said this numerous times before. Many could handle the challenge of the Christian narrative, but when the same challenge was applied to other issues, this was met with much resistance. The truth is, if we are to have integrity, we must seek to apply the same process to everything. Question three. Do you want the predictions to be true in order to support your current belief system, or not to have to face that they possibly weren't true? Whether it be religion or other apocalyptic ideas, many of these concepts are about escaping reality for an all-inclusive Eden in the sky. This can inevitably blind us to reality itself, and it also assists us in evading responsibility for our own lives and freedom. Number four, have your views of the world become apocalyptic in order to try and make sense of it all? Is it the desperate need to be certain about the universe and all that we face? Are you looking for a Messiah to save you, which after this morning, I think it might be Mick, or wipe out the enemy? The truth is, reality is extremely complex, and we do ourselves a disservice when reducing everything to a fairy tale utopian outcome. Number five, have you become imprisoned by your own ideology? This was me growing up, and like Kev said about growing up in evangelical Christianity. Your ideas and beliefs are more often than not assumptions about the world and the human condition. Assumptions about the world and the human condition. An honest and rational conversation with yourself will often show them up to be irrational, if not completely absurd. Number six, through what lens do you view the world? Benevolent and good, with problems that can be fixed through reasoning and human ingenuity, original blessing? Or malevolent and evil, with the fundamental feeling of hopelessness? These aren't easy questions and require humility and kindness towards yourself whilst walking this journey. Again, as Kev stated earlier, we are not implying at any point here that there are not things that should be rationally feared and worthy causes to fight for. Not at all. But if it creates hopelessness or becomes psychologically pervasive, permanent, personal, we cannot create solutions to fix the problems that we face. The cure can never be worse than the perceived disease. A quest for truth isn't just within the confines of the church. I still don't think it has fully been accepted how much of a religious and mystical society we are currently living in. Are we willing to hold all our ideas to the same scrutiny and reason? I would argue that regarding many matters, we're not. The act of refusing to face reality is not confined to members of fringe Christian cults. It is found among the believers of all movements. It is found in adherence to all ideologies. It is a danger for all individuals. This is why it is important to promote an enlightenment culture that values the virtue of rationality and critical thinking above all else. Jesus brought a message of repentance, which simply means to change course and turn the other way. It wasn't forced by the sword. It was the opposite. He encouraged love and respect for your neighbor, to live at peace, to reason together. that the ultimate kingdom of God is established by the way that we treat and revere one another. As my father so wonderfully proclaimed, hope is the confident expectation that the last word has not yet been spoken, and there may well be a word after that. So in closing this morning, here's a clip inspired by Chicken Little. Get yourself out of your bunker. You're in a lovely restaurant.
Thanks for listening to another Q York podcast. Now, if you've enjoyed what you've heard today, then we would love to hear from you. Feel free to drop us an email to info@qyork.co.uk and let us know who you are and where you're listening from. Don't forget there are blogs and all sorts of media to be enjoyed at qyork.co.uk, which you're welcome to browse at your leisure. Until next time, enjoy the quest.